Welcome. Whoever you are, wherever you come from, whoever you love, we welcome you. My name is Dave Clements, and I am your intern minister, and I'm joined today by the Reverend Melissa Carvel-Zemer, who is the minister of this congregation. I'd like to extend a special welcome to all those who are visiting today and for the first time, and admonish you to join us after the service in the basement for a really special day, because today is a ministry fair, and you'll have an opportunity to learn about all of the committees of the church, but also just be able to enjoy some great fellowship.
So the capital campaign is here, imminent. Yes. Notice that was somebody from the building expansion team who just applauded. After years of planning and purchasing property and two unanimous votes of the congregation, we are ready to proceed, and we will be launching the capital campaign next Sunday. We're going to be trying to raise over $1 million to get funds to expand and renovate our church. And so we are inviting all of you to come to our special service next Sunday. There'll be some fun announcements made at that service by Marianne Yeagler, my co-chair I see in the back there. And after the second service, there is a free celebration lunch for everybody. So we hope, even if you come to first service, you'll come back about 12:45 for that. It's going to be rain or shine, because it's going to be under a tent on our new property in the back behind the church. So hope to see you all there next Sunday. Thanks.
And in the spirit of improving our accessibility, we're going to try an experiment with our embracing meditation. For years now, I've invited you to speak the names of those who come with you to church on your hearts and minds aloud in the service. For the next few weeks, we're going to experiment with asking you to write down what you wish to share on these yellow cards. They say caring card, and you'll find them in the pews. You can do that at any point up until the opening hymn. And during the opening hymn, I will pass these baskets to collect your cards, and we'll share what you have to share so that everybody can hear at that point in our service. It's an experiment, so tell me what you think, and if you have better ideas, we're always looking for ways to make sure that everyone feels included in our services. We light our chalice, symbol of our faith, for truth sought through a questioning heart and an attentive mind, and for love, pursued through obstacles inside and outside our hearts, and for forgiveness and all it entails, the place where love and truth meet and merge.
Come unto this place of peace, and let us silence lead your spirit. Come into this place of memory, and let its history warm your soul. Come into this place of prophecy and power, and let its vision change your heart.
How do you become a Unitarian Universalist? So you can be born into a family that practices Unitarian Universalism, and that's all you ever know. You grow up Unitarian Universalism, and you learn what that means from as soon as you can talk and walk. And sometimes you learn how to be a Unitarian Universalist when you're little and you start coming to Sunday school. And you come into the sanctuary and you learn to dance to the orchestra and the opening hymns. And that's important. And then when you get older, you go to Sunday school and you learn about how to be a part of a youth group and how to form relationships with the others in the youth group and how to live our mission of love and justice in the world. Or sometimes you come as an adult, a young adult, and you go from congregation to congregation, and you learn about all the different ways that Unitarian Universalists practice, because you're moving to go to the military or to go to college or to try out a new job. And so you get exposure to a lot of different ways that we are Unitarian Universalists. Or you come as an adult, an older adult, who's maybe been a part of other faith traditions or no faith traditions, and you walk into this place for the first time, and there's a lot to learn. So you have this order of service that helps you figure out, what do we do here in our services? How do we worship together? And then you read the newsletter and you find out about our classes and you come to the ministry fair and you find out ways to be involved in the congregation. There's a lot to learn to discover how to be a Unitarian Universalist. And we're always learning because we're always growing and changing, and so we need different things from our faith community. How do you learn to become a Unitarian Universalist minister? Well, you have to go to theological school, which is an important part of learning what it means to become a minister. And that is a school that you go to for 3 years after you go to college. And you have to do a chaplaincy, which is usually in a hospital or sometimes in a prison. And you have to do that because a minister has to know how to be with people who are suffering. And a hospital and a prison are both places where people are suffering. So ministers do chaplaincy internships to learn how to do that. And most important of all, people who are learning how to become ministers do an internship in a congregation. And the reason that they do that is because there's so much to learn. They have to learn how to lead worship services, and they have to learn how to teach religious education classes, and they have to learn how to work with boards of trustees, and they have to learn how to nurture all of the ministries that all of the people in the congregation they serve are doing. And we are so fortunate because we get to have someone who's doing that learning here with us. Dave Clements is starting his internship. This is his very first Sunday leading a service for us, and he's going to be with us for 2 years. And he's going to get chances to do this about 6 times a year. Over the next 2 years for us, he'll be leading services, and a few other times he'll be working with others to support the services. And that's important, but he'll also be doing everything else that happens in this congregation. Bit by bit, over the course of 2 years, he'll be trying to taste it all. And one of his most important jobs is to make mistakes. Because that's how we learn. If we don't make mistakes, we don't have a chance to learn. And one of your most important jobs is to help him learn. And that means telling him about yourself so he gets a chance to know you, telling him about what matters to you in your heart so he gets a chance to learn about how to nurture spiritual development, telling him about your questions about Unitarian Universalism and the being a Unitarian Universalist in the world so he gets a chance to practice theological conversation, telling him when you think he does something great so he can know what resonates with other people, and telling him when you think there's something that he maybe needs to dig a little deeper into, because that's how he learns. And so together, we're going to help Dave form into a minister here. And when he goes out into the world and serves another congregation, you will always be with him. Just like Unity Church Unitarian is always a part of me in everything I do because they helped me learn how to become a minister. So you have a very important job, and I hope that you'll welcome Dave with open hearts and join me in saying the blessing, which is printed in your order of service for Dave's internship. We offer our blessing on you, Dave, and on your call to ministry. Together we'll strive to create a world of love and justice. We will teach each other, and we will join together in sharing the ministry. May you heed your call to serve, to learn, and to grow. And may you always be faithful to your authentic self with the courage to seek and speak the truth.
Thank you for your blessing. And I look forward to working with you, to learning and growing together.
And now is the time when we dedicate also our religious education volunteers and teachers. At this time, I would like to call forward the teachers and volunteers in the religious education program for children and youth. And if you could just come up here, all of you, if you're a volunteer, if you're an OWL teacher, teach preschool through high school, please join me up here. Today is a new beginning for our faith development program, and most groups will be crafting their class covenant, which is a series of promises made to each other. It seemed like a good time then for us to covenant with these religious education volunteers. Everyone has a part. So I invite you to follow along in the yellow insert that's found in your order of service. So if you are a parent of a child, from infant to high school senior, Please rise in body or in spirit. And if you could join with me in what's written in here. As parents,
we acknowledge that we are the primary religious educators of our children. I will be an active partner with you, recognizing that regular attendance is key to a child's comfort and feeling part of the community. I will strive to be diligent in reading and responding to your requests. Thank you for learning and growing with our children.
Now, can we all join in that refrain then? Thank you for learning and growing with our children. Parents, you can now be seated. And I ask now all our young people, preschoolers through high school youth, to stand and to speak to your teachers. It's written in here. Challenge us to the best person we can be. And for learning and growing with us. Young people, you can now be seated. And can all the members of this congregation please rise now in body or in spirit? We appreciate
that you have undertaken this ministry with children and youth. We pledge to support you by funding staff to work with you in a facility that is clean and has adequate supplies. But most importantly, we will pay attention when you ask for our help or our participation. Thank you for learning and growing with our children.
And growing with our children. You got that down, Pat. You may be seated, except for the members of our Religious Education Committee.
Your service is valuable. We are here for you. Share with us when times are hard and you need help. Share with us your joys, too. Thank you for learning.
Thank you for learning and growing with our children. And teachers, do you have anything that you would like to share? We're here.
We promise to come prepared, but will remain open to new adventures that our group might bring. I pledge to communicate liberally with my teaching team, parents, young persons in my care, and staff, and we will remember.
At this time, I'd like to mention that in second service, we will be recognizing Fred Smith, our longtime Our Whole Lives facilitator. He has served this congregation and our movement for 16 years. So thank you, Fred, for that precious, precious gift. Thank you all for learning and growing together. And in this spirit of partnership, let us sing our children off to their religious education programs.
In honor of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, which many in the world are celebrating this week, I read these words of wisdom. Once more, Atonement Day has come. All pretense gone, naked heart revealed to the hiding self. We stand on holy ground between the day that was and the one that must be. We tremble. At what did we aim? How did we stumble? What did we take? What did we give? To what were we blind? Last year's confession came easy to the lips. Will this year's come from deeper than the skin? Say then, why are our paths strewn with promises like fallen leaves? Say then, when shall our lust be for wisdom? Say now, love and truth shall meet, justice and peace shall embrace.
And now, surrounded by the sounds of our community and the world outside these windows and doors, we in this space will rest for a moment in Sabbath, settle into this space, and keep silence for a few moments together. I invite you to join with me now in the spirit of prayer. Holy Spirit of life, moving in each and every breathing life, beating heart, we gather together on this beautiful, crisp morning, harbinger of a season to come, in this place of rest and renewal. Today, we dedicate teachers and offer blessings on students and an intern. It's a time of beginning, a time of blessing learning. May we also have a blessing for our own learning. And may this spirit of blessing learning remind us of the value of humility. Remind us that we don't always understand at first glance. Remind us that sometimes we misjudge a situation or a person. Remind us of the value of slowing down, of stepping back, and seeking to understand. And in the spirit of Yom Kippur, this holy season for Jews around the world, when we discover in the slowing down and stepping back that we have erred, give us the courage to make amends so that we may always be beginning again in love. Amen.
As I look out upon you, it's great to see your smiling faces and great to be here today. And as we spend this next few moments together in the spirit of the talk which has been prepared for you, I would hope that each of us will learn something today and grow. Seek first to understand, then to understand. You know, we've heard this phrase before, but what does it actually mean? What are we trying to understand? Harper Lee, one of American authors, in her book To Kill a Mockingbird, wrote, and I quote, "You never really know a man until you understand things from his point of view, until you climb into his skin and walk around in it, until you have walked a mile in his shoes." And as we heard in the opening music this morning, so wonderfully done by Hal and the orchestra, Joe Smith's words, "Walk a mile in my shoes." And I just quote some of them for you. "If I could be you, and you could be me, just for 1 hour. If we could find a way to get inside each other's mind, If you could see through my eyes instead of your own ego, I believe you'd be surprised to see that you've been blind. Walk a mile in my shoes. Walk a mile in my shoes. Hey, before you abuse, criticize, and excuse, walk a mile in my shoes." That is what I ask of each of you as your intern minister, to walk a mile in my shoes. In return, I promise that I will walk a mile in yours. Since we have both committed to this journey to be together, and full support and encouragement. But how do we do that? Each of us are so completely contained in our own experiences, and despite our best intentions, many times we are completely oblivious to what is happening or going on in another person's world. And such was the case with me. I came from a very interesting family, having been raised both Jewish and Catholic. My father was Catholic, my mother was Jewish, and I have three older brothers, and each of them have chosen a different religious faith, probably, well, based on who they married. But that has made an interesting mix. And of course, in that whole mix was that when I came out as a gay man, that only put more fuel into the fire of this religious confusion that existed in my family. And so for years, I tried to remaintain contact with my siblings and try and share with them my life, be engaged in their life, and really haven't got somewhere. And, you know, through the years, I developed a lot of anger. And this summer, as I had an opportunity to serve as a chaplain and to really begin to learn what it means to understand, I began to look at my relationship with my siblings differently. And instead of approaching them in a way of, I want you to understand me so we can understand each other, I approached it in a manner of, well, how do they tick? What do they think? And as I began to look at their different religious backgrounds and religious beliefs and teachings, I began to gain an insight into how perhaps they felt the way they did, and the confusion that they might have in regards to having this gay brother who went totally against all their religious beliefs. And as I reached out to them from not a place of them asking them to understand me, but from me trying to understand them, surprisingly, an interesting thing happened. My oldest brother contacted me and said, so you're a chaplain at the VA hospital. Well, tell me about that. And could you also tell me about Unitarian Universalism? Of course, I almost fell off the chair that I was sitting on. But I responded back and thanked him and told him about our seven principles and the worth, principle number one, the worth and dignity of all people. And he responded back, you know, sometime in the near future, I would love to sit down and have a conversation. And so I felt a window had been open. But that window had been open because I had stopped trying to have him try to understand me, but me try to understand him. We all want to connect. We all want to be heard. We all want to be understood. Now take a moment. Think back on this past week. Maybe it was a friend, maybe it was your spouse, maybe it was a child, maybe it was your boss. But think about an experience where there was some anger or there was a conflict that occurred. And as you're thinking about that, I want you, in all seriousness, to turn the tables and to nail that person that you were angry with. Try and go into their world and assume the role of them and try to understand what was behind their behavior. And as you begin to do that and understand their behavior, you begin to master one of the first things on what it means to go on the path of understanding. David Nichtchen, in his book, The Pursuit of Happiness, states that you should ask yourself what the situation looks like to the other person. Your boss, for instance, might be demanding at times, but maybe you'll notice that his or her pressuring bosses could be the reason for this. By realizing that, you might be able to begin to understand his or her behavior and see that it's just a product of his environment or her environment. This very holds true with a person's background, personal circumstances, education, and so on. In many cases, people will start an argument with an unresolved third party just to let off steam, or because they're still lost in thoughts about an exasperating situation. Therefore, you should only seek for the reasoning behind a person's action, but also try to understand how it would feel like to be your counterpart. How would it feel like to be your counterpart? From that particular moment, when you understand just a slight fraction of the problems and feelings your counterpart is facing in his life, it will become easier for you to empathize with them. You know, if you're like most people, you probably seek first to understand. You want to get your point across. In so doing, you ignore the other person completely, pretend you're listening selectively, hear only certain parts of the conversation, or attentively focus on the only words being said, but miss the meaning entirely. So why does this happen? Because most people listen with the intent to reply and not to understand. You listen to yourself as you prepare in your mind what you're going to say, the questions you're going to ask, etc. You filter everything you hear through your life experiences, your frame of reference. You check with you what you hear against your autobiography and see how it measures up. And consequently, you decide prematurely what the other person means before he or she finishes in communicating. Does any of this sound familiar? You know, this past summer, while working as a chaplain intern at the VA hospital, I came to understand this concept of seek first to understand. So on my second day of being an intern, and my supervisor said, well, Dave, just go up to your floor and just start calling on patients. I had no training in what to say, didn't know what to say, but she said, oh, you'll figure it out. But most importantly, seek to understand and then to be understood. I said, oh, okay. Well, I'd heard that before, but I really didn't know what it meant. So as I went about my work that day and climbed the stairs to the fourth floor and began to knock on doors, and you know, the first one I knocked on, and the patient said, oh, chaplain, oh, I don't need to see you. Second one, oh, chaplain, no thank you. The third one, oh, chaplain. And so I'm beginning to think, well, you know, I'm in a hospital. I'm here to help people. What's wrong? But then the fourth person that I knocked in, I introduced myself as Chaplain Dave, and he invited me to come and sit down. And not knowing what to say, and you know, many times as we get into a conversation, we start thinking, and this was a total stranger. And so I sat there, and I listened. And for the next 15 minutes, he just proceeded to talk, and all that he ever wanted was to have someone to listen to him. And I thought about that experience, and then in the days that followed, a couple days later, I knocked on a door, and a patient said, oh, chaplain, come in, sit down, I want to talk with you. And for the next 10 to 15 minutes, he told me everything that was wrong in his life and how everybody hated him and how nothing had gone wrong. And I was sitting there thinking, how can I help this? How can I offer pastoral care? And the more I listened, finally, an inspired thought came to my mind. Ask him what brings him his greatest joy. So I asked him, I says, what brings you your greatest joy? And he stopped, and his whole countenance on his face changed. And he said, computer programming. And I thought, well, gee, okay. Wouldn't be my joy, but... But he began to talk. And he connected with that part in himself of where he had found joy. And he told me about how he had built a computer from scratch and how he had designed systems. And he went on and on and on. And at the end of our conversation, because I needed to get to a meeting, he said, chaplain, can you pray with me? And as we prayed together, I felt that this person had been understood. And so I share that with you in the context of, think about in your own lives this concept of seeking to understand. Maybe we listen well enough and we authentically say, I know how you feel. Do you think it's possible to truly walk a mile in someone's shoes? Hold that thought. I know how you feel, but do you really know how I feel? You know, this summer, serving as a chaplain intern, I really came to understand that meaning of how you feel. You know, this concept of walking a mile in shoes, sure, we can walk in a person's other shoes, but their experience is unique to them. But through empathy and practicing it, we can connect. And such was the case when a patient by the name of Eddie, who I had met 11 o'clock on a Monday morning, I walked into his room, introduced myself, and I said, "I'm Chaplain Dave, and what can I do for you?" And he looked up, and I saw a very pale face and a very saddened gaze. And he said, "Chaplain, can you pray for me? But better yet, can you heal me?" And I thought, and I said, "Well, you know, we can pray for you, but I don't have that power to heal. That's in God's and yours hands." But I said, "Tell me about what's going on." As I sat and listened, and he explained that he had just been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and that the medical profession had not given him any hope whatsoever of survival. And he was angry. Why did this have to happen to him? Why did he have to be chosen to have this illness? I sat and I listened. And then I turned to him and I said, "I know how you feel." Several years earlier, I had been diagnosed with cancer. And as he looked and as we gazed for the next 10 minutes, I shared with him my story. Over the course of the next 2 weeks, every day, either in the morning or the afternoon, I'd go in and I'd see Eddie. And there wasn't really a change, but he seemed to be doing fairly decent. And I skipped one day, and I came in the very next day, and he was sitting up in bed, smile on his face, sparkle in his eyes, color in his cheeks. And I said, "Eddie, what's happened?" And he said, "You know, I'm okay. I've decided that I'm going to live life. I've decided, because of what you said and as our talks together, that now I understand. I'm not angry anymore. I want to make the best. And if I beat this cancer, then great. But if I don't, each day I live, I'm going to give it my whole heart." And so we sat there and prayed together. The next day, Eddie left. And I don't know what happened, whether Eddie will make it or not, but I do know this, that I learned about seeking to understand and then seek for understanding from him. And so I challenge each of you, as we grow together in a congregation in this journey of my ministry, that we'll all come together, that we'll seek to understand so that we can be understood. May you go forth seeking to understand and to be understood, and may we all grow together. Amen.